you can meet and hear Hank Hanegraaff, Hans Feeney, Scott Klusendorf, Craig Parton, Will Wheaton, Angus Manoogian, and Jonathan Fisk at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Collinsville is 15 miles east of St. Louis. Early bird registration is $110. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Perhaps you saw this floating around the internet. Government had no role in my late-term abortion struggle. Let's keep it that way. It tells the story of a woman who had, well, a troubled pregnancy, no doubt about it, and struggled with the idea of late-term abortion. In the end, the child was born. She was healthy and has had two other children since. A little bit of a medical miracle there, but someone says, look, the government didn't get involved, didn't need to be involved in that kind of a decision. Joining us to talk about this opinion piece in USA Today, Scott Klusendorf, president of Life Training Institute, author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. Scott, welcome back.
Good afternoon, Todd. I can't wait to see you at the conference coming up in June.
Same here. I can imagine someone saying, look, Scott, all's well that ends well. The baby was born, and this kind of shows that the government doesn't have to interfere in a woman's decision on this, doesn't have to ban anything to, because this turned out well. What's your response?
Well, hey, I'll tell you what, I agree. In fact, I think government should stay completely out of this decision. I think there should be no state, federal, or court interference with a woman's decision to have an abortion for any reason or no reason, late term, early term, midterm. I do not care if the unborn are not human. And that's the question that isn't taken up in this article. In fact, the headline is just a raw assertion. The government had no role in my late term abortion. Wait a minute. If the unborn are human, the government, by our law, by our Declaration of Independence, for example, has a very vested interest in that child, because the government's job is to protect the natural rights of all human beings in virtue of their humanity. So the real question we need to start with here is, what is the unborn? Because if the unborn are human, then the government does have a role in the late-term abortion decision. Now, that doesn't mean there couldn't be pro-life laws that allow a woman to protect her own life in the case of a dangerous, life-threatening pregnancy, but we find out as we read this article that's really not what's in play here.
Okay, there's an old saying that hard cases make bad law.
Mm-hmm.
How does that apply here?
Well, imagine somebody saying that we ought to get rid of all traffic laws because we might have to run a red light rushing a loved one to the hospital. Just because there was an exception doesn't mean the rule itself is bad. And the problem with these hard case arguments, Todd, is they don't justify Planned Parenthood's position. They don't justify the abortion rights position. The abortion rights position is that any woman can have any abortion at any stage of pregnancy for any reason or no reason, and you should have no say in it, whether you're the government, the husband, the boyfriend, or family member. It's her decision for whatever reason she wants. This argument that's advanced in this article here would only justify abortions when the mother's life was clearly at stake. It wouldn't justify all abortions. So it really doesn't make the case for the pro-choice position, and yet, ironically, so many pro-choicers hide behind these hard cases rather than state flat out what their real position is.
So I want to be clear here, because often we talk about the health or life of the mm-hmm. mother, and that means something very different than it sounds like. It's become a very broad avenue, hasn't it?
It's a weasel word. Health means, according to Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton, the two Supreme Court cases that were decided in 1973. Health means a variety of things. Now, your average citizen hears health, he thinks physical health by default. That's not what the court meant. In the companion case to Roe v. Wade, Doe versus Bolton, the court made it very clear that health had to be defined broadly. In fact, so broadly you can drive a Mack truck through it. It's not just the physical health of the mother, it's her emotional health, her social health, her family health, her economic health. In other words, health means whatever the doctor willing to perform the abortion wants it to mean, not something that we can nail down specifically. Life of the mother would be a much more definable term, but not health.
Okay, let's just be as clear as we can on this one. Life of the mother, that is a little harder to weasel around. She might die. How should a pro-lifer approach that question?
Well, first of all, any pro-life doctor or pro-life apologist would argue that we should care for the mother and the child as patients. Both are patients. Are there cases where the pregnancy does pose an immediate and dangerous grave threat to the mother's life? The answer is yes. For example, ectopic pregnancy, where the embryo implants in the inner wall of the fallopian tube rather than the uterine wall. In that case, if the embryo grows in that narrow tube, that tube ruptures, the mother is likely to die. In addition, we can't save the child in that toxic environment. There's no way for us to save him by transporting him out of that pathological environment. So the situation confronting us is this: do nothing and lose two humans, or act in such a way that we save one life, even though the unintended but foreseen result is the death of the embryo. Now, some people would say, there you go, you just gave up your pro-life credentials arguing that way. No, I didn't, and here's why. The pro-life argument can be put very simply as follows. Premise one, it's wrong to intentionally kill an innocent human being. Premise two, abortion does that. Conclusion, therefore, abortion's wrong. In this case, the doctor foresees the death of the embryo. He does not intend it. With abortion, we both foresee and intend the death of the unborn human. So the parallel there doesn't exist between a surgery to save the mother's life in the case of ectopic pregnancy and abortion, where we both foresee and intend the death of her offspring.
I want your response to some of the things that the author of the op-ed piece actually said near the end. She writes, I can understand why late-term abortion strikes people as a terrible choice. For so many, it is. It is a terrible reality that I hope no woman ever has to face. Sounds great. What is your evaluation of it?
Well, my first question would be, why is it terrible? I mean, if abortion is no big deal, if it's just a personal choice, if it's just a preference, why be bothered by it at any stage of pregnancy? And that's really what this article is getting at. It's trying to, in a backdoor way, argue that all abortion-related decisions are personal only to the mother. She alone can determine right or wrong. Well, if that's true, if the choice to have an abortion is personal, like choosing chocolate over vanilla, then why are we bothered by it? It's no big deal. It shouldn't be troubling to anyone. But if it intentionally kills an innocent human being, which is the pro-life position, then of course it should be troubling to us. And if it is troubling to us, maybe we shouldn't be allowing it.
She also says it's a fairly uncommon thing. Only about 1% of abortions occur at or after 21 weeks, and we've heard this before. Why are you looking to ban something like this? And it only happens in 1% of the cases.
Well, okay, this is an unbelievable attempt to deceive the public. 1% of 1.2 million abortions a year is 12,000. Now, I don't know about you, but if we heard of some case that was intentionally killing 12,000 innocent human beings a year, I think there'd be an uproar about it. The only reason it's not an uproar with abortion is because people are assuming the unborn are not human. They don't argue for it, they just assume it. But in this case, we're talking 12,000 lives. And by the way, when you look at why these late-term abortions are done, you read, for example, Warren Hearn's book, Abortion Practice, the medical teaching text that teaches late-term abortion procedures, and you even look at the Guttmacher Institute, you see that the majority of these late-term abortions are not done because the mother's life is in jeopardy. They're done because it doesn't fit with the woman's lifestyle. In fact, if you go to the Guttmacher Institute page, which the author cites in this very article, the most common reason given is some disruptive event in the life of the mother. In other words, not a life-threatening event, a life-disrupting event. Something went wrong relationally in her life, and she feels the need to abort. That is not a life of the mother issue.
One more before we take a break. This is, again, the author of the op-ed in USA Today. As I stared at the gut-wrenching possibility of dying as a result of pregnancy, it became clear that I was deeply pro-life. I believed that I had a right to live, and I desperately wanted to become a mother. I knew that staying alive was a moral thing to do, even if it made me feel uneasy. If no one wants to talk about this reality and the chilling effect of the ban, even one with exceptions.
Yeah, this is patently dishonest. There is no pro-life bill anywhere that's ever been proposed that says a woman facing a life-threatening situation like ectopic pregnancy, like I mentioned a moment ago, would not be able to have surgery to save her life. This is a scare tactic. By the way, this isn't new. This is very Clinton-esque. You may remember in the 1990s when the debate over partial birth abortion was being done, we heard that these procedures were necessary to save the mother's life. Well, we quickly learned, surveying the peer-reviewed medical literature, that that, in fact, was not the case, that the vast majority of these abortions were done strictly for socioeconomic reasons, and there wasn't even a recorded article anywhere in the peer-reviewed literature that indicated you had to do this surgery to save the mother's life. It was just a soundbite. And that's what we have here, an attempt to scare people that says if we pass a law protecting children after 20 weeks, women are going to die. It's the same old scare tactics we see with the back alley argument.
Scott Klusendorf is our guest president of Life Training Institute. He'll be with us for another 10 minutes on the other side of the break. We're responding to a recent USA Today opinion column titled "Government Had No Role in My Late-Term Abortion Struggle. Let's Keep It That Way." We'll continue to talk about it. And I'd like, before we're done, to get his thoughts on the exit of Cecile Richards from Planned Parenthood.
To get a taste of love. You can call it what you like.
We would like to overlook the difficulty of daily repentance and death to our sins in the interest of progressing to a more advanced spirituality.
Rebecca Curtis from her new audiobook, Ladylike, Living Biblically.
Somehow, spiritual advancement always amounts to our getting to spend more time on the things we like and calling it stewardship or service.
You can purchase and download an audio version of Ladylike, Living Biblically at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. Ladylike, Living Biblically by Rebecca Curtis and Rose Adel.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking to Scott Klusendorf of Life Training Institute, author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture, about a recent USA Today opinion column titled, Government Had No Role in My Late-Term Abortion Struggle. Let's keep it that way. Scott, you're going to be making the case for life at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference. Tell us about your presentation.
Well, I think one thing we're going to do right out of the gate is define what pro-life is. That term is now being confused. It's being put up for grabs, and we're going to make clear what the pro-life syllogism is, how we can make that case for life with people who don't accept biblical authority, who maybe don't even know what it is we stand for, and are subject to being confused by articles like the one we just looked at here today. So there's a crying need to clarify what pro-life means, what our actual arguments are, and then we'll look at five bad ways people argue against the pro-life case in the public square so that we can be prepared to give good, solid, Christ-honoring answers.
You can meet and hear Scott Klusendorf making the case for life at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois, about 15 miles east of St. Louis. Early bird registration is $100. That includes three meals. Find out about the rest of the conference speakers and topics and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. One of the things that I think emerges from responding to an op-ed piece like this is kind of the need for clear thinking, the need for understanding the arguments of the other side. And I think that's one of the things, I know this is kind of your wheelhouse, but I think it's one of the things that the pro-life movement, as enthusiastic as it is, suffers from, the kind of an inability to think clearly about the other side's arguments.
I think there's a failure to keep the main thing the main thing. The main thing in the pro-life case is the status of the unborn. Are we dealing with a human being or not? Once you clarify that issue, you can see through all the red herrings, all the attempts to hijack what we're really arguing, and you're able to clearly articulate what the right thing is to do here. For example, take this article. You think that this article is about saving a woman's life, and all this woman really wants to do is make sure women don't get shut out of an option that could save their lives if they're facing a life-threatening pregnancy. But then you get to the end of the article and you find out what she's really arguing when she says no one should demand that the government be the final arbiter of that choice, no matter what it is. No government, no intrusive bureaucracy should be allowed to second-guess women, our doctors, or our decisions, because my life and the lives of all American women are worth protecting. Now we've gotten to the really thing, the really clear thing they're wanting to argue for. They're not about allowing abortions only in the case when the mother's life is at risk. They don't want any restrictions whatsoever. And there it is right there in the concluding paragraph.
Okay, I got to know why that is. Why is it that this position on abortion, whether it's Cecile Richards or the woman who wrote this op-ed piece or countless other advocates for abortion on demand from beginning to end, no restrictions, why is it so absolute?
When you believe that you have no fundamental rights at all if you can't intentionally kill your own offspring, and that is in essence your religious position, you will fight for it as strongly as a Christian theist will fight defending the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And I think that's what's going on here. There are people who have convinced themselves, as Hadley Arkus points out, that if you don't have a right to an abortion, no other rights will exist for you. And when you believe that, you will fight ferociously to protect that right, especially if you've broken your moral compass.
I got to ask you about the legacy of Cecile Richards, who's stepping down after, well, almost two decades of leading Planned Parenthood, the largest abortion provider in the United States. I know you've been thinking about it. What are those thoughts?
Well, her legacy is a dark one, obviously. How many millions of deaths has she presided over? I'm not sure I know that number, but clearly she was someone that would be an apologist for the abortion procedure no matter what. It didn't matter if there was trafficking in fetal remains. It didn't matter if we were talking about late-term abortion. None of it mattered. It didn't matter if minors were being exploited by sex traffickers who would use them for prostitution and then arrange abortions for these girls that were 13, 14, 15 years of age. It didn't matter. She defended all of it. All that mattered was protecting her imagined right to an abortion. And everything else, forget it. That's a sad legacy, Todd.
Is the edifice that is that kind of set of arguments, unwillingness to deal with the repercussions, I would argue the inevitable repercussions of abortion on demand, is that edifice beginning to crumble at all as far as you can tell?
I think we're certainly making some good progress. Say whatever you want about how you view the current president of the United States. It's clear his administration has been friendly to the pro-life cause, both at the federal court level and willingness to propose and sign legislation that would come across his desk and use the executive order to cut off funding for abortion overseas and other areas. So I would say that there's some hope there. Obviously, a lot is going to ride on the elections coming up midterm, but I wouldn't say, as some pro-lifers do, oh, we're winning this fight, the public is with us. I would urge caution on that. I think we got a long way to go. If you look at the latest Barna survey and you look at the attitudes of millennials and you look at the attitudes of Generation Zers, you see some really troubling, confusing trends, and they're no more clear on abortion than they are on other issues like marriage and right and wrong in particular.
Even a law that would restrict abortion to 20 weeks, or in Mississippi, they're considering a law that would restrict it to 15 weeks. And those laws are incremental. They are kind of a gradualist approach, and there's nothing wrong with that. Even if they're passed, they still do not address the central issue of why abortion exists at all, do they?
They don't, but that doesn't mean they're not useful, and you're right to point out that they are still beneficial. The problem is, in Roe versus Wade in 1973, the court decreed, without evidence, just decreed it, that we don't need to resolve the question of when the unborn become human. And it basically said, look, theology people don't agree, philosophers don't agree, scientists don't agree, therefore there's no truth to be known on this question. But of course, then the court ruled that abortion is legal through all 9 months, which meant the court really did claim to know when life begins, in that it said it didn't begin until birth. The problem we face is, as a nation, even as Christians, we have not made the main thing the main thing. The main thing is, what is the unborn? Is he one of us or not? You either believe each and every human being has an equal right to life, or you don't. If you do believe that, there's only one question we need to resolve. Is the unborn a human being? And if so, he should have the same natural rights as you and I.
With only 30 seconds, someone says, I saw that op-ed piece in USA Today, and boy, it convinced me. I see now that this attempt to ban late-term abortions is wrong-headed. How do you respond with about 30 seconds?
I agree with you completely. You're right. In fact, that op-ed doesn't go far enough. It should state clearly that any abortion should be allowed for any reason, and I will agree with that position if the unborn are not human. But you're going to have to make an argument for that. You can't just assume it.
Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute, author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. You can purchase this book and learn more about Life Training Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Scott, looking forward to seeing you in June, and thank you very much.
It's going to be fun. Thanks, Todd.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to continue our series on Lutheran piety. We'll be talking with Pastor Will Whedon, author of the book Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey, about good works. He wants to liken these good works to Easter eggs that God has laid out for you to find and for you to walk in. And he's got a biblical basis for it, too. We'll also play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Well, it's true. If the unborn aren't human, why restrict it at all? And that's really the dividing line. If the unborn are human beings, then they deserve protection. They have intrinsic value. And then doing away with them for any reason becomes unthinkable. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
What makes Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church in Freeburg, Illinois so special? Our new members talk about the family atmosphere, the welcoming people, and the outstanding music. But most importantly, you'll be confronted with your sin and comforted with the assurance that Jesus has removed that sin so that you can live each day as His baptized and forgiven child. Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church is at 612 North State Street in Freeburg, Illinois. Sunday worship is at 9 a.m., Sunday school and Bible classes at 10:20 a.m. Call 618-539-5664.
Have you ever wanted to better understand philosophy and its impact on your family, your church, or your world, but didn't know where to begin? Concordia University, Wisconsin has an innovative, free online course for you entitled Philosophy Kata Christan. These six engaging video sessions are taught by noted Lutheran philosopher, lecturer, author, and pastor, Dr. Gregory Scholes. Learn more by clicking the Kata Christan logo at issuesetc.org. issuesetc.org.